Good evening, everyone. It's really nice to see you all where you are in your home. The expression that is found in early Buddhist texts of spiritual friendship always touches me and comes back to mind now. This notion of walking on the path together and supporting each other in our practice. As we are coming to the end of the week, some of us have been sitting Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We met this at the end of the morning with Juan and Freddy and Thomas to talk about guitar and play. Last Saturday we had the study group. It feels, and next week there's the retreat. It feels it's ongoing. It never stops, and I personally feel very much the support and how it's really, really helpful to keep the momentum, to keep the fire burning. Since I think su since Saturday, I've been dwelling on something that was said during the study group. It has stayed with me, and as a koan, as an ongoing question since Saturday. So we were discussing this text. About the three messengers, a woman, a man who led an unwholesome life arrives in at the end of his life and is questioned by King Yama, the Lord of Death, and the guy really questions him and why he led the life he led, and he said, "Didn't you see the blind man and the old age, and haven't you encountered sickness, old age, and death?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I did have, but I was negligent." And so to that, I went on into something talking about how when we are negligent in our life, we end up paying the cost somehow. To which Roshi said, "Yeah, but it's not because we lead a healthy life that we're not going to get sick." And it's what is being pointed at is impermanence. So I've been staying with that question of how does that all fit together? And it's true that it's not because we try to live a healthy life and that we won't get sick. And my mother had an extremely healthy life and she died of cancer. And what kept coming back to me is what's relevant in both cases, the impermanence and this thing of living a wholesome life, is what seems at the core of it is paying attention, being mindful of what's going on. So in this story of the Buddha going out of his temple, leaving the temple gates, he starts to see things that he hadn't paid attention to. And that what in the Buddhist term sets the wheel kind of turning. He embarks in this in his personal journey. I was talking to a friend of mine today who has a very young girl. She's, I think, 3, 4. I think, yeah, she's 4. And she's very, very difficult. Well, difficult. It's very difficult for him. He gets out, he takes her out of school, and then she starts screaming for 2 hours nonstop. And there's not much he can do. Actually, he said to me, "Well, there's one thing that I can do that is very easy to stop that, is put her in front of the TV and give her to watch a animation movie." And that stops it because it brings the attention, it brings the attention to something that, and not from what frustrates her. And he's pondering about whether or not it's such a good idea to do that. I was very kind of touched by that. Because it's a very dramatic instance, even though the cause of that, I don't know what the cause of that was. There was another friend who told me recently that with his 2 daughters, one was she same age, 4 years old, and she's really difficult right now, and she's very frustrated. And last time she wanted to draw a dinosaur and she didn't manage to draw it properly the way she wanted. And she started to be really upset and screaming and crying about the fact that her drawing of her dinosaur wasn't very nice. And so this story about putting the child in front of an animation movie is so that the attention is focused on something and doesn't see the suffering, the anguish. It speaks to me, and because in many instances this is what we do. And I feel that a lot of the centerpiece of the practice is about paying attention, is about seeing what's going on, is about staying still in order to see more properly what arises. And as I've been looking at the early Buddhist texts and get familiarized also with the various distinctions that they have in it, around that notion of mindfulness and the foundation of mindfulness that you find in this famous text, Four Foundations of Mindfulness. It's a great roadmap also to pay attention to what arises in our experience, that distinction of the paying attention to the bodily sensations, mindfulness of the body, seeing how it creates, it causes feelings to arise, sensations of comfort or discomfort, and what also sometimes turns into thoughts. Well, I don't like that sensation. I would like that sensation to stop. I really like it. I would like it to continue. And so I've been doing that a lot in my personal practice, and what I've been sharing at the school where I teach meditation. And in there, obviously, we all have that experience that it's changing all the time. It's really absolutely never the same. And if we really look closely, it ever changes at every single breath. Bodily sensation, the environment, the sounds, the feelings that we have about it, the thoughts that comes and arise. So by coming out of his palace, by putting away if he had a tablet, probably Buddha would have put away the tablet, and he goes out and observe what's going on. What do we see out there? What do we see in there? How does that work? And so it's not because I pay attention and I start to take care of myself that obviously I'm never going to get sick, I'm never going to get old, I will never die. But what does arise from that witnessing? And another way to look at impermanence is this, the way in the Zen tradition that it's put out is like the great matter, when we talk about the great matter of life and death. The basic issue that we're dealing with is the great matter of life and death. So another way to say, well, impermanence, yes. Things arise and things fade away. And it has all sorts of implications, obviously, with the way we experiment our life. Things that arise and things, beings fade away. This morning I had a dream and I woke up in tears. I was in my dream there was it was about my mother and it's not even 3 years yet that she has left her body and it's still difficult. You hold on. And at the same time, again, it's very different at each moment. And my experience is that by looking carefully of how things arise and by really paying attention and to everything, not just myself, but also, as we mentioned last week, hearing the cries of the world, really opening up to everything, absolutely everything that arises. My experience is that there's a sense of care that operates, a sense of being touched by what is going on. But being touched implies that we're able to recognize what is going on. We are able to see what's going on. And it's endless what's there to observe and bear witness to. I feel it's extremely it's extremely rich, beautiful, tragic. Heartbreaking, joyful. See the shade of Seu's cat on the wall. It's very poetic. It's changing everything to be able to open up to what arises and embrace it and being able to dwell in that space without reacting. without being caught up by our habitual patterns. This week I had a meeting with Buddhist teachers from a French association called Terre d'Éveil, and it's a more or less a Vipassana group, but the people that are in there are people who get trained at the Insight Meditation Institute. This thing with Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein and these people and so, but also with this whole Insight Meditation Society and all that, it's very much a westernized form of Buddhism. So we were talking about how I could be part of that, and I could lead activities there. So I was talking about my background in Zen and my whole path in this Buddhist tradition. But then the question came, really, what's the difference? How exactly is that different? What we've been doing here and what they have been doing there in their tradition. And besides kind of the collar of the robe, which we don't wear, besides the collar of our cushions, beyond the few forms, I was unable to really say anything very distinctive about what we do compared to what they do. And I said, well, actually, I've noticed in the Vipassana tradition and the way you do it and the way I've seen things, for example, you really sit, when you sit, you kind of, people sit wherever they want in the room. Whereas we are kind of more structured, whether it's a circle or whether it goes around. And I kind of like that. Very kind of like the form of it. I kind of have like our form. Kind of, and at the same time, I know that we've been in spaces where we didn't have black zabutons and we sat on yoga mats, and we didn't have black cushions and we sat on orange cushions, and it was totally irrelevant, really. Even though I do have a preference for black cushions. But it was really coming back to paying attention, being mindful, and ultimately spiritual friendship, caring for one another. Or, you could use another big word, love. Sharing are the fact that we're human. And exposed to the tragedy of life. And boy, there are a lot of tragedies these days. There are a lot of cries. So yes, sickness, old age, and death will still occur, however we live. And by paying attention, it enables us to see what kind of life we want to live. It might enrich our experience. It might arise. It might bring forth a sense of care, a sense of love, a sense of wanting to help, wanting to serve. It's up to us, really. And it's up to us, and it also depends on all kinds of conditions and who we meet and how we support one another. It makes me think of long time ago. I was working for a publishing house, and the person I was working for is an editor and a translator, and he had this huge project where they with a large, very large number of writers, they made a new translation of the Bible. It was in French, it's called La Bible des Écrivains, I think. And he wrote a little book, and he was discussing about that project and about translation. And he was talking about the word resurrection. And obviously, for us now, when we hear that word, it's super loaded. Obviously, if it's the whole thing of Christianity. So it's super loaded. But he said, you know, it's really about waking up. Really, it's to wake up, literally. It's to wake up. doesn't have to have any metaphysical meaning. It's just really to wake up. So they were looking for ways to go back to that original meaning without having that any loaded term. And so the awakening is if we don't take it in any kind of mystical, metaphysical way, just really wake up. Wake up from our sleepiness. So that we're not going through life without paying attention. And at the same time, it just reminds me of the fact that in a text that we studied at Dana, I forgot the Path to Awakening, there was this slogan about living life as if it were a dream. But it really means really just seeing the impermanence of it, seeing the not making anything fixed, like, yeah, this is so solid. So yeah, the question, what did the Buddha awake to? He pushed the gates of his supposed palace. And suddenly he wakes up. He sees and he wakes up. Or it engages him into that path where he starts to pay attention. There's something I very often talk about intention, going back to the intention, but I feel it's something else. It's going back to, it's a bit maybe intention too, but it has a different flavor. Yeah, what is the bottom line of what we do? And there are so many ways I feel to say it, and and I feel all these different ways to say it are all very important, because that gives us different resonance. It echoes differently at different time, and it's all useful. But what is the right now, the expression for us that kind of speaks to us, what is the most important thing that we feel is at stake in this practice? So now that's the question I'm asking you. What's the most important thing that is at stake for you? I'll stop here and let's engage into sharing on this question or another question or another things that you would like to share. Yeah, Krisha.
Hi everyone. Do
Yeah.
you
I
listen?
copy you.
Thanks. I don't know. I can't answer you. I just wanted to say about life, sickness, old age, and death occur, but also burning, growing, beautiful youth occur, and I'm not sure if. For me, I don't feel I completely understand and connect what you're saying, but the part of tragedy and the cries of the world, it's not alone for me from the beauty and the life, the energy and the joy. But I tend to be optimistic or positive, even when I'm sad, I don't know. I have a book from Adyashanti that the name is The Most Important Thing. And it annoys me a lot because it has a lot of nice, beautiful quotes pointing to you, but it never says exactly what is the most important thing. And your question, I think, is pointing as that also. But I don't know. I couldn't answer you. You know, deep. This is the most important thing for me. I don't think I have it. It's kind of a hole. I don't know. Growing up, growing with you as a person, what would I like to? I don't know either. Because his life was too different. He kind of stepped away from life as I live it, and in his times with a kind of apostles and spreading the word. But the family and the children and having to earn money and stuff wasn't there, it seems. And for me, it is. And I think it's to wake up in there. Try a good balance between practice and teachings, or in my case, it's more learning. And apply to my life since I woke up till I go to sleep, whether it's at the first time when I was born, whether it's at the last time when I'm dead. I don't know. But it's really nice to be making this path with you all. And thank you, Joel, for your talk.
Yeah. From what you say, it's also true that everything is important. That's a possible answer. But also, I find it's really wonderful. It's wonderful to, to keep it fresh, and it's like it can change or it can be expressed in various ways. And about tragedy, I kind of, it's not negative, but it's, I kind of like that word, but for me, it's the equivalent of There's something about life is not a life is a bumpy road. It's life is a bumpy road. And that great stuff in there. It's nothing, yeah, you're right. You know, it's not, we don't have to be pessimistic, and pessimism is just a point of view. But things occur, and optimism is also a point of view. And from these two different angles, actually, the experience of life is very different also, obviously.
Hello.
Yes, you.
Because of paying attention, I was today the last 2 months, I didn't go to the market at this day, but couple, two clients that I have at the market 5 years, they call me to say goodbye, that she is a French woman and he is a Portuguese guy. She's 80 years old and he is 70. And they called me to say goodbye because they returned to France. And I feel by them the tristesse, the pain to go back and to, they lived in they lived 5 years here near the sea by in caravans. And they go every week to us to buy things to eat. And they were very special persons for me and for and they call me in the weekend to say goodbye. And you know, I was, why? Why you go? Ah, because our children need us, and they changed so much with this pandemic. They changed with this COVID. They were from this group of people that against vaccines, very strong negationists. I don't know if you use this word. And I feel they have a lot of pain in ourselves because they have this strong against something that we don't know what is. No? They have one idea all the time. It was very difficult to the relation with them because I love them too much, and the other people, we have a very beautiful relation. And then with this pandemic, with this COVID, they become more so strong that today I feel they are so many problems in her heads because they fight against this. They were only the two persons that don't use masks in the market. They were all the time fighting against something, some idea. I was there. I go surprising them because normal I don't go to the market, and I decide to go to say goodbye to them. I go. And without knowing that I come, they have this paper for me with the telephone and kisses and bye. And I'm all the day thinking about about them. I'm paying attention what is that? What is this fight that they change so much? They are fighting with them, with themselves, I think. Yeah, it's sorry to I heard your Dharma talk and I mixed with this feeling. I picked this paying attention because it was strong by me today. Okay, thank you.
I feel very much the in what you're saying, and we saw that very much with the pandemic, how suddenly what appears is how certain people are very attached to ideas, and we're seeing it right now with the war in Ukraine, how getting stuck with ideas puts us in a lot of pain. And not only for us, but for others also. And in a way, it's also, one could see it as fixing reality into something solid, anchoring reality in something very solid, whereas it's never, if we really pay attention, it's never as fixed as it seems. It's not this. And that's really the meaning of like this thing that we have about the no self concept, so that it's not It's not that it doesn't exist. It's like it's nothing just that is just it, like this.
Yeah, they have this fixed idea that they have the truth, they know. They have this fixed idea all the time and they fight until the point that they feel so angry with everything, with Louise said to me, yeah, you know, with 70 and 80, we turn to France. It's like a funeral. It was. I take him and I, why do you think I take him? And I ask, why you are so angry with everything? Because they were very special persons for us. They lived in the nature with the caravans. They lived life rising in the desert. They were, and now they seem it's a conspiration against everything.
And in the midst of that, they give you a heart.
Yeah, in the midst of I think.
And this is where we meet.
Yeah, I have the telephone and they invited me to come.
and that's beyond friends. And that's beyond ideas.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And this is where we meet. This is where we can meet.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond ideas.
Yeah. Perhaps I can to visit sometime. Because they are good people. Only we are all a little confused, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Are we running out of time? Oh, is it time?
4 minutes yet.
Okay. Anyone else before we? Yeah, Keisha.
I just forgot to share or to remember. Also, adding with you, Joa, when in the summer retreat, I think it was the last. And I think it was not the first time that I haven't been there. It was the first time for me, and I love it very much. Roshi Sita, I was Jikido, outside, where in a circle, kind of a circle, wherever we could. There wasn't even cushions. I think it was on top of some little trees and some chairs, someone on the floor. And yeah, we do come practice everywhere, anywhere, all.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, it's also there.
And I feel very much that our lay life, with whatever we do during the day, is very is how can I say? How do you say propice?
Auspicious, maybe.
Auspicious to, in order to be exposed to all these changes and all the frustration and all the joy and all the richness of life, you know, because we're in an environment that is where things are happening. Yet, even though when we're on a retreat, even when we're trying to get rid of a lot of the habitual stuff that is going on, a lot of things are happening. People get into fights in retreats, people argue, people just upset with one another even though they don't speak, or whatever, you know, all kinds of things happen. If we look closely, again, if we pay attention, we realize that in details, if we go into the details of it, that it's not necessarily smooth. So we can also learn from that. But I find in our lay life, it's even more on our face all the time. When my friend has his 4-year-old girl screaming for 2 hours, well, he can practice patience. Huh? It's there. So there's a Buddha field there for us to grasp, to to get, to enjoy. All right, we'll leave it up to here. To here. Thank you so much for sharing and listening.